My name is John Muncy, chair of the D315 course team. On this cassette, we're going to be discussing issues related to technologies of crime control. In chapters 4 and 5 of book 2, we introduce the idea that punishment may not be simply about dealing with and disposing of convicted offenders, but is also about wider social regulation and processes of discipline. In chapter 4, for example, in the early 19th century, new kinds of institutions, the asylum, the workhouse, as well as the prison, were designed and built to promote social stability when traditional ideas and practices appeared outmoded. Innovations in prison design, such as Bentham's Panopticon, were to instill values of obedience and compliance, as well as to control prison populations through constant surveillance. Writers like Michel Foucault give an even broader understanding of institutional confinement. In the grand design of the Industrial Revolution, it was not only the criminal who was incarcerated in the prison, but the lunatic in the asylum, the conscript in barracks, workers in factories, and children in schools. Foucault argued that the increase of such institutions amounted to an increasingly panoptic world, or a carceral society. Means of control first developed in the prison were adapted to non-penal and community settings. For Foucault, such transformations herald a more tightly, though less openly, controlled society, in which all aspects of social life became subject to surveillance, official scrutiny, and discipline. In this cassette, we'll be exploring whether such notions as panopticism or the carceral society have any bearing nowadays. In particular, we focus on the controversies surrounding the installation, use, and regulation of closed-circuit television cameras as a means of monitoring people's behaviour in shopping centres, in public thoroughfares, and on the roads. Now these increasingly being used not just by the police, but also private security companies. Are these technological innovations useful in controlling crime? If so, at what cost to our own personal freedom and liberties? We talked to two police representatives from Newcastle and Gwent and to the General Secretary of the Civil Liberties Pressure Group, Liberty. By the 1990s, one of the most ambitious police-operated CCTV schemes was developed in Newcastle. Superintendent Bob Patterson explains.
In Newcastle City Centre, we have a very large shopping complex and a large area of licensed premises and restaurants. We realised some years ago that that was ideal for an overt CCTV system. There's a lot of CCTV systems in the city centre already, inside shops, shopping malls, one or two nightclubs have little systems on the doors. It seemed sensible to extend that for our use with relaying the pictures back to the police station. It could become part and parcel of our policing philosophy for the city centre. The traders in particular were very keen to support us, and we had excellent support from Newcastle City Council and the local authority. And indeed the government gave a grant through the local authority to pay for 50% of the cost. The system is overt. We involved the planning authorities, of course, but also the media, and held open meetings with different groups of businessmen, community forums, the local authority. We told everybody what we were doing. There was a lot of support from both the people who come into town to work, those people who have businesses, and those people who come into town on an evening to socialise and drink. We were quite overwhelmed by the amount of support there was. We published the details in the press and in TV of where the cameras would be. They are quite large in effect, so they are quite readily visible, which I think is important for CCTV because the public should know what's happening.
Andrew Puddifat, the General Secretary of Liberty, takes a less sanguine view of public demand and public support for CCTV.
There are currently about 220 CCTV schemes in operation or planned up and down the country. And we're moving very rapidly to a point when most town centres will be covered by video surveillance of some kind. In some cases, it's administered by the police. In some cases, by a local authority. In some cases, it's administered by private owners of one kind or another. And what's, I think, really extraordinary is that there's been this rush to using widespread video surveillance of the people of this country without there being any authoritative research that shows that video surveillance actually helps prevent or reduce levels of crime. There's some small studies, but nothing definitive. And there is no statutory regulation whatsoever. So although it's been introduced, apparently as nominally for crime control, there's no legal prohibition on other uses being made of video surveillance, such as the monitoring of people on demonstrations, on consumer pickets, trade union activity, or any of the other uses to which our streets might be put. So I think our first concern is not that video surveillance is being used per se, because it may have some benefits, but we're concerned at the absence of groundwork being done to establish what the benefits are, and for that to be measured against the costs. And secondly, the absence of statutory regulation which would prohibit video surveillance being abused by private or public interests.
However, for Bob Patterson, the benefits of CCTV are quite clear.
The system went live in 92, and since then, for instance, assaults are down over 11%. Burglaries are down 49%. Robberies are down, and in fact, every category of crime is down. In the 3 years since 91, 5,000 crimes less, as I said earlier. The feel-good factor, as described to us by the people who operate businesses in Newcastle, has risen apace with the fall in crime. Trade is up, people are coming back into the city centre at night, not just young people out for a good time, but women, older people are coming back into the city centre. Of all the people arrested because of CCTV or where CCTV has been used in evidence, and that number far exceeds 400 at the last count, only on two occasions have people pleaded not guilty. The Crown Prosecution Service informed us that the saving to the criminal justice system must run to many hundreds of thousands of pounds now through CCTV, because the number of people pleading not guilty to their actions, that can still mitigate as to why perhaps the fight started, but it's very difficult to say it wasn't me who swung the first punch or I didn't kick him when he went down, if it's there on tape. The number of elections for trial has much reduced. The number of guilty pleas has increased tremendously.
CCTV is praised not only as an effective crime control measure, but also as a cost-effective means of dealing with offenders in court. It is also argued that the use of video evidence is tightly controlled. Richard Thomas, a member of the Association of Chief Police Officers Crime Prevention Subcommittee, explains.
Anything that's recorded on videotape can be used in evidence as long as the tape itself is protected and that the credibility of the tape is preserved. We would put in a system of immediately taking that tape from the machine if there is evidence on it, and making a working copy of the tape, sealing the original tape up and making sure it's locked away and logged. The working tape, of course, can then be shown if there is a defendant to the defendant, and his or her reaction to that tape can be to be gleaned, or it can be actually taken into the investigating officer's possession and he can look at it and it may help him in the investigation of the offence. There are no regulations as to who sees the tape, the working copy, but investigators must always be aware, and I think, again, this is something that we're coming to terms with as technology overtakes the gathering of evidence or increases the gathering of evidence, and that is that you may well be asked in court questions about who has actually viewed that tape, and you must always be in a position to say who's viewed it and for what reason. It's very important to show the defendant, always if he has a solicitor, in the presence of his solicitor, the tape, and we do that when we're interviewing them, simply to gain their reaction to the evidence that's available, and they must know what the evidence is against them. But of course, there's an implication there when most people see themselves committing an offence on tape are much likely to admit it or plead guilty before the court. That's saving a lot of court time and a lot of time and money for both the courts and police officers.
In a similar way, Andrew Puddifat acknowledges the potential benefits in terms of crime control, but the issue of how and where it is used is still contestable.
I'm not opposed to video surveillance per se. And if there's evidence that it does actually put off people from carrying out violent acts, hooliganism or theft, then I'm very happy to support that. Obviously, anybody would be. But I would like to see the use of video surveillance restricted to those activities. And if that's what we're using it for, fine. Let us simply say in law that is all it can be used for. And let's have the safeguard that it can't be used for any other purpose. It can't be used to film teenagers who are hanging around in a shopping centre because they've got nowhere else to go. And that information being recorded on a police file or a private security firm's file, even though they've done nothing wrong. And I'm particularly concerned about the growth of private security firms and their own video surveillance. I said there were 220 local authority schemes in operation throughout the country in shopping centres, but there's something like 150,000 surveillance cameras in operation in different parts of the country. And the vast majority are in private hands, in the hands of private individuals or private companies who use them for their own purposes. Now, all I'm saying is when this technology is developing as fast as it is, and the level of film is reaching quite a high degree of sophistication if you pay the right money, I think it should be subject to controls and not be allowed to just happen willy-nilly.